Hi, welcome to This is China. I'm your host, Wendy Sun, a journalist based in Beijing. In this podcast, I'll invite my friends, both Chinese and international, to share with you their observations and stories in China. In this episode, we'd like to share with you an academic workshop on the global economic prospects in 2024. The speaker is Ian Kaoshe, World Bank's Deputy Chief Economist and Director of the Prospects Group. The group produces the World Bank's flagship reports, one of which is Global Economic Prospects, discussed in this episode. The Q&A section was moderated by Jerry Rice, former Director of the Communications Department of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. The workshop was organized by the International Finance Forum on February 28th, Beijing time.
Good morning, everyone. It is great to join International Finance Forum to exchange views on the global economy. Let me start. This report comes out twice a year. The latest report was January, and the title of the report was Subdued Growth, Multiple Challenges. I think this title explains where we are and how we see things. The report has four main parts. The first two parts are about the outlook, how do we see the global outlook, and how do we see the different parts of the world. In the World Bank, there are six regions we operate in, and there is, in a sense, an outlook for each region in this report. In addition, there are two thematic chapters. One looks at the accelerations of investment and the consequences, and then another one looks at fiscal policy and commodity exporters. I plan to talk a little bit about this investment acceleration chapter. So what I thought would be useful for us today is to focus on three questions. The first question is, what are the near-term prospects for the global economy? The simple answer is that the global economy has shown remarkable resilience, but there is a slowdown underway, and that slowdown will continue. Third year in a row, we will see weaker growth. There are good reasons for this: tight monetary policy, weak trade and investment. And risks profile is better balanced, but still on the downside, and there are major geopolitical tensions that could derail the recovery. The second question, what happens during investment accelerations? It's an important question because every policymaker is thinking about how to accelerate investment. And if it happens, it's like magic. Many good things happen. I'm going to talk about these. And then finally, what are the policy priorities? As much as the global economy has shown resilience, going forward, the big challenge for policymakers is to build on that resilience. And I'm going to talk about at the global and the national level, what should be done. Throughout the presentation, I will use this acronym, EMDEs, that stand for Emerging Market and Developing Economies. So very quickly, let me start with the forecasts. So here you see the forecast for the world economy, advanced economies, excluding United States, emerging developing economies, excluding China and the regions, and basically the kind of the forecast for different years. So for the world economy, we are expecting this slowdown, third year in a row, continue. Growth will slow from last year's 2.6% to this year's 2.4%. Despite the sound somewhat subdued, but at the same time, last year what happened is quite remarkable, and we need to acknowledge that. At the beginning of last year, most commentators expected a sharp slowdown, even a global recession. A recession was expected in the US, a recession was expected in the euro area. Both of these, basically, economies averted recessions. And as I'm going to talk about, the U.S. economy has done remarkably well. But having said that, this slowdown is still underway. In a sense, we weathered the storm, But then the question is whether we see the sun in the horizon. So the next thing is that if you look at advanced economies, on the surface, yes, they slowed, but still they deliver growth around 1.5%. That number is largely driven by the US economy's performance. If you take the US economy out, actually other advanced economies slowed last year very, very sharply from around 3% to 0.8%. Going forward, we expect the slowdown in advanced economies continue as they feel more the impact of this monetary policy tightening. And of course, the weakness in the manufacturing sector will have an impact on the outlook as well. Now, turning to emerging market and developing economies, what you see is things are pretty stable. China last year delivered growth above 5%, in fact, 5.2%. And that helped a lot. If you take out China, what you see, emerging developing economies actually slow quite a bit from 4.2 to 3.2%. This year, we are expecting growth to be stable. And outside of China, growth basically to accelerate a little bit. Now, we need to put these numbers in context. And that context is a comparison with the average growth prior to the pandemic. And when you do that, what you see, whether you look at advanced economies, whether you look at emerging developing economies, growth this year, as much as we go through a very the difficult period, is there, but it is lower than what we saw prior to the pandemic, that decade from 2010 to 19. And let's don't forget, nobody was happy about the growth that decade delivered. So the next thing I'm going to talk very briefly about the regions. In the case of East Asia Pacific, still the region delivers one of the highest growth rates in the world after South Asia. We expect China to deliver growth around 4.5% this year, and the region as a whole to deliver growth around 4.5%. The other important region we focus on, at least for this presentation, is South Asia. South Asia, led by India, going to deliver growth actually around 5.6%. Obviously, that is the fastest growing region. And for the foreseeable future, given India's performance, it is going to be the flag carrier among the emerging market developing economy regions in terms of how much growth it delivers. So let me put these things against the backdrop of certain developments. So how should we think about growth around the world? The first observation is about how advanced economies are doing and how China is doing, because these are the engines of global growth. And from 2023 to 2024, advanced economies will slow and China will slow. So there's a reason for this slowdown. If you think about emerging market developing economies outside of China, it's important to think this group as two groups: those that have basically good credit ratings and those they do not have good credit ratings, meaning credit ratings below C or so. And there is a big difference. Countries, they have good credit ratings, strong credit ratings. They deliver growth pretty much consistent with what they deliver prior to pandemic. And those weak credit ratings, they basically deliver growth, but much weaker than what they had prior to the pandemic. And those are the countries they were affected by the tightening of monetary policy. So there are some countries they are doing remarkably well given the challenges, and some others not so well. The next big issue is the global trade. Last year brought an exceptional and unfortunate outcome. Global trade was flat. In fact, if you look at goods trade, it contracted. This was quite remarkable in the sense that we did not see these types of outcomes outside of global recessions. In fact, last year growth rate was the weakest outside of global recessions over the past five decades. Global trade contracted for the first time outside of global recessions. So this year, we are expecting the sources that drove the weakness last year, including, you know, this rotation from services, from manufacturing to services, and then, of course, certain challenges involving certain economies are going to be behind us, and we see a bit higher growth, around 2.3%. But still, that's going to be half of what we saw on average in the prior decade. The third important thing we need to keep in mind, the real interest rates in the U.S. Now, the real interest rates are around 6% in the U.S. That's the real cost of borrowing, and it is the highest rate we have seen for a very long time period. And it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for these countries with weak credit ratings to take advantage of international financial markets. So for emerging developing economies, it's a difficult environment in 2024. When you look at this five-year growth following the pandemic from 2020 to 2024, it is the weakest five-year growth in any period we saw since early 1990s. Why this is an important observation? It's an important observation because 2020s were supposed to be the decade of strong growth for the global community to basically meet the sustainable development goals. That's not going to happen in the context of poverty. It's not going to happen in the context of climate objectives. Growth is key to, of course, eliminate poverty, and growth is key to invest and accelerate climate transition. Now, some countries have done well. I would say China and India, since the pandemic, continue to get close to the per capita income levels of advanced economies. But when you take out China and India, convergence process stalled. So emerging net market developing economies outside of China and India as a group was not able to get close to income levels of advanced economies. If you look at fragile conflict situations, there, in fact, they become even poorer. Now, if you look at the recovery from the pandemic, one-third of emerging developing economies haven't recovered yet, in the sense that their per capita income still below the per capita income what they delivered in 2019. This is a bigger challenge for low-income countries and fragile conflict states. So how should we think about risks given this outlook we have? Risks, I think, better balanced relative to what we have last year, June, but still on the downside. One important change with respect to risk, we used to focus on financial stress as the number one risk threatening the global economy. But now the number one risk is conflict and geopolitical tensions. I'm going to talk about one risk here, that's inflation. We think that inflation will continue coming down this year after basically peaking last year, but not as fast as many commentators and financial market participants think. And central banks will continue to be very cautious when they think about cutting interest rates. With that, let me turn to the second question. What happens during investment accelerations? So whatever problem you think of in the context of economics, whether that problem is economic growth, it is eliminating poverty, it is creating jobs, it is basically thinking through climate problem, infrastructure, education, health, you need to invest. If there is a single big problem in the global economy, it is the lack of sufficient investment growth. Now, the investment gaps, investment needs are very large. The numbers are staggering to get to the climate goals sustainable development goals. But when you look at investment growth has been slowing. In the first decade of this century, in 2000s, investment growth on average was around 10%. After that, it averaged around 5%. This year and next year, it's going to be around 4%. So we looked at past episodes of fast investment growth. When I say fast investment growth, countries deliver investment growth around at least 6% on average for at least 6 years. We call these periods investment accelerations because we want investment to grow at least 2 percentage points higher relative to the previous 6 years average. When you look at these episodes, the good news is that around 100 countries since 1950, you have 200 episodes. 200 episodes per country, around 2 episodes of investment accelerations. China is an exception because China has been enjoying an investment acceleration for a very long time, and that is still ongoing. But you look at other countries, on average, only 1/3 of them was able to trigger an investment acceleration over the period from 1960 to 2022. The share of countries that started an investment acceleration peaked in the first decade of this century, in 2000s. But then, since investment is slowing, of course, the share of countries that basically deliver investment acceleration declined significantly. Now, what happens during investment accelerations? First, of course, investment picks up from around 3% outside of these episodes, around 10% on average growth you see in investment. Output growth increases significantly from around 4 to 6%. And when you think about productivity growth, which is critical, that also increases significantly by actually fourfold. You see higher pace of structural transformation, the growth of manufacturing and services sector, they both accelerate. And you see the poverty headcount declines significantly at a much faster pace during these episodes relative to other episodes. And then you look at monetary and fiscal indicators, financial indicators, trade and FDI. Surprise, surprise, the economy is heating, but at the same time, inflation declines. Government debt declines. Real interest rate comes down. Economy exports more, much faster, growth of exports, and able to attract a lot of FDI relative to other periods. Now, why this happens? It happens because investment accelerations almost always are accompanied by comprehensive policy reforms. Some reforms are more effective than others. Fiscal consolidation is critical. You need to basically take care of your fiscal house. But financial reform is also important. Trade reform is also important in terms of increasing the likelihood of these episodes. External environment is critical. If you have higher global growth, the likelihood of acceleration is higher. If you have basically better institutions, the ability to spark investment acceleration is much stronger. What is important is to have a comprehensive package of reforms. When you have a comprehensive package of reforms, the impact you see in the aggregate is much larger than the sum of the impact of piecemeal reforms. Acceleration of investment is critical to turn the tide with respect to the slowdown we see in global potential growth and slowdown we see in many countries' potential growth. In fact, over this decade, it is possible to reverse the slowdown in potential growth by undertaking investment accelerations in a synchronized fashion in many countries. Finally, let me turn to policy priorities very quickly. At the global level, there are well-defined challenges. We have the climate challenge. We have food insecurity. We have debt distress in many developing economies. We need to bolster global cooperation to overcome these challenges. When it comes to trade and investment networks, it is going to be imperative to preserve the rules-based international order and expand trade agreements. And we never forget the challenge of climate change, and we need to find ways to accelerate the decarbonization process. And that will require all hands on deck global effort. Of course, there are challenges at the national levels we need to think about with respect to monetary and financial policy and the fiscal policy. Inflation is coming down in many countries. It's going to be critical for central bankers to basically exhibit a credible stance with respect to monetary policy and communicate their decisions very clearly. Now, with respect to fiscal policy, unfortunately, in many countries, fiscal space is limited. That means on both the expenditure side as well as revenue side, countries need to undertake reforms. Spending efficiency should be increased, and we need to eliminate these regressive subsidies, especially subsidies in the context of the carbon emitting energy sources. Now, beyond the near term, we need to find ways to boost growth and increase the resilience of the global economy. I already talked about how to accelerate investment, but lifting long-term growth will require more integration in the context of trade, eliminating trade barriers, not less integration, not more inward-looking policies. In many countries, we need to strengthen education systems. We need to basically have stronger social protection mechanisms and make sure basically a big chunk of society able to cope with shocks, and we have seen many of them, and become resilient. Inclusion is the key word, and bringing parts of the society, especially the female, increasing the female labor force participation, going to be important in many countries to basically make sure potential growth is not declining further. So let me summarize very quickly. The first question I ask, what are the near-term prospects for the global economy? Global economy has shown remarkable resilience, much better than what people expected, delivered growth. But a slowdown is underway, and we will see the third year of that slowdown in 2024. Monetary policy will remain tight, and trade and investment remain quite subdued. Those are the reasons why we see this weakness in the global economy when it comes to growth. Risks are still on the downside, and the geopolitical tensions, heightened geopolitical tensions, is the number one risk. Second question I ask, what should we do to accelerate investment? And there I explain the magical story associated with episodes when you see these sustained investment growth over a period of time. But these types of periods require a Herculean effort on the part of policymakers. The big question is, which countries are going to undertake these types of comprehensive policies to push forward and spark investment accelerations? With respect to policy priorities, I think at the global level, we need to work together. We need to work better. There are big global challenges. We need to find ways to address them. We need to, you know, have consensus on the problems and the solution of the problems. Now, with respect to investment and the limited fiscal space, countries need to find ways to mitigate the trade-offs between that sustainability and large investment needs, reducing gender gaps in the workplace and bolstering inclusion going to be critical to cope with the decline in potential growth. So you can follow me on LinkedIn. You can also visit our webpage, the Prospects Group. In addition to publications, we have a number of studies looking at the major problems the global economy facing, including weakening growth, weakening productivity, inflation challenge, and the debt challenge. With that, let me thank you again for inviting me, and I look forward to having the exchange.
Looking at the questions, there seem to be a number of questions about the two largest economies in the world, the US and China. Basically, as I read these questions, I am one is the US, one is China. On the US, the question is basically, how do you see the outlook for the US economy? And related to that, inflation, the timing of Fed interest rates, of course, everyone's interested in that. US employment, US consumption. Basically, I think the questions are around, how do you see the prospects for the US economy in 2024? And then similarly, I think on China, it's basically the same set of questions. How do you see the outlook for China's economy in 2024? How do you see China's role in the global economy? And actually, there's one more focused question on China, because clearly they picked up on your excellent point about the magic of investment acceleration. I haven't myself quite heard it described that way before. I found it extremely interesting. Anyway, on China, there's a question also about what can China do to further enhance the attractiveness of investment, particularly foreign investment, but investment. Basically, the questions on the two big economies in the world, how do you see them in 24?
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Very quickly, about the U.S. economy, we are expecting the U.S. economy to slow this year. Last year, growth in the U.S. Around 2.5%. So this is, you know, a much higher growth than the U.S.'s potential growth. And it's quite surprising that the U.S. was able to deliver this type of growth in an environment you have these record high interest rates. Now, there are good reasons for that. The fiscal support was there, excess savings was there, and then, of course, the resilience in the labor markets and the resilience we saw in consumption. This year, I think these things will continue playing a role, but to a smaller extent, so the economy will slow and increasingly feel the lag impact of the tight monetary policy. With respect to, you know, the Fed policy action, the inflation is coming down, but there is quite a bit of persistence when it comes to core inflation. Okay, this is the, you know, the part of inflation you take out the more volatile components like food and energy prices. And as much as, you know, we have seen this sustained decline in inflation going forward, we think that it is going to take a little bit of more time to get to the levels to make the U.S. Fed comfortable to have these successive declines in interest rates. We are expecting, you know, the Fed to start cutting interest rates in the second half of this year, in June or beyond. And then depending on data, to calibrate the pace of the interest rate cuts. So I think what we saw even the past, I will say, 6 weeks, clearly shows there is a lot to be digested before, you know, jumping the gun and thinking that the Fed is going to start cutting interest rates in March that is not going to happen. The there is still inertia when it comes to inflation, that the Fed needs to convince itself that inertia is basically not there anymore to see this sustained decline in inflation going forward. In the context of China, let me make certain points. Growth in China rebounded last year to 5.2%, following the reopening of the economy. This year, the growth is going to slow to 4.5%. Now, this reflects the deceleration we have been observing in consumption. With the reopening, there was a boost, but that unwinded. And household spending is held back because of subdued consumer sentiment. So investment, we are expecting to remain somewhat weak this year and next year. But the investment will be supported by infrastructure-related stimulus. It will be, it will continue to be weighed down by weakness in the property sector, which is, we think, recover gradually. So this forecast has in the baseline this nice trajectory of slowdown. And when you think about the Chinese economy, that's exactly what the policymakers would like to do, get the kind of a growth rate, sustainable, high quality growth. And China is on that trajectory. Now, the question about what can the authorities do in the context of investment or in the context of broader challenges? The obviously a predictable regulatory environment that supports fair and competitive markets is critical for boosting investment. Whether that's domestic investment or foreign investment, this is not about China. This is, wherever you go. Well-functioning product and factor markets that basically allow resources to move to their most productive uses, critical for China as well as other countries. I think in this context, the policy interventions that can promote a level playing field between the state-owned enterprises and other firms through, ensuring competitive neutrality and removing, certain implicit guarantees. When you think about the firms, reforms can basically facilitate firm restructuring and exit of less efficient firms while promoting the entry of new, more innovative firms. And you would like to ease the, most binding regulatory, institutional, and financial bottlenecks to let the kind of the successful firms to flourish, invest, and expand. So the big challenge, everywhere and always is policy credibility. And in the context of, the emerging developing economies, providing specific implementation details in conjunction with these policy announcements critical. I think that what we also recommend to emerging developing economies, consulting with businesses, other stakeholders, providing the necessary transition periods when certain policy measures implemented in the context of especially regulatory changes critical. And I talked about investment accelerations. It's not like, China needs an investment acceleration. China's challenge of obviously to move away from investment and export-driven growth to consumption, services-driven growth. And I think the kind of the strengthening the consumer confidence in the short run and undertaking the types of reforms necessary to improve the growth prospects in the long run going to be critical. China has done remarkably well, and has the policy means to overcome the current, you know, challenges. The issue is that, you know, how it's going to address the kind of the slowdown we see in consumption and the subdued consumer sentiment. Policymakers have already implemented certain measures, and we expect them to build on those measures and address the challenges.
Thanks for listening. If you have any question you want to ask Dr. Karshe, don't hesitate to leave a comment. We'll reply you in the comment section. And you're always welcome to leave a message to tell us what you want to hear from us. Bye for now.